Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything the sun relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. Appreciate you sharing with your friends and family. It's been wonderful. We appreciate the ride, and we're looking to ride a lot longer now. So very special topic today, very special guest. One of the big problems is conversations about family wealth, whether there's a lot of money in the family or a little bit of money. And a lot of times the issue is generational communications. And, you know, these communications, they don't come naturally, and they're usually not easy. Because you're talking about money. You're talking about who's getting what when somebody passes away. And, you know, too often, and, you know, our speaker said this, a pattern of avoidance, silence are deeply embedded and have been reinforced over many years and even generations. And it can leave a lot of people feeling confused and anxious and unsure on how to best communicate and help with family in the most productive way. So it's one of those things that we really want to make sure these communications are done properly. And this is one of the reasons why we have Kevin Quinn here. Now, Kevin is the founder and president of Legacy Counselors, an estate and business planning law firm. And they're in Massachusetts and Connecticut. He's an attorney. The interesting thing is he's also got a degree in business administration. He's also got a degree in aeronautical engineering. So I'm going to have to ask you about that transition. But the big thing about Kevin here is this. He has a tremendous amount of experience. He's very well respected. He's been a teacher at multiple universities. He's got a number of books. And he's just very, very well respected. And we're just grateful to have him here, because if I went through the whole bio, we'd be here for about another 20 minutes. So he's just that good. So, Kevin, welcome to the show. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate your inviting us, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much for the introduction.
So here's the big question. Aeronautical engineering. So I know Emery Riddle, my whole family's engineers other than and accountants. So what was the transition from being an aeronautical engineer to?
Not actually an engineer. I was a professional pilot. So I went to Emery Riddle and got my commercial pilot's license. I was a professional pilot for 5 or 6 years. The truth is I got bored with it. I remember very distinctly flying over New York City with a guy that was just an incredible, what we call stick and rudder guy. He was just a master at handling the airplane, and greatest respect for him in the world. We're approaching LaGuardia, and he says, Kevin, hey, get on the radio and see if we can switch from 13 left to 13 right. Co-pilot doesn't question the captain. Okay, great. So I did what he asked. We got it on the ground. I said, Steve, why in the world did you ask me switch? He said, well, because I happen to know the layout of the airport, and we can save 5 minutes of taxiing time if we go to this runway rather than that runway. And I thought about it, and I said, so the pinnacle of a career is to know the layout of the airport well enough that you can save 5 minutes of taxi time for your clients. That's not good enough for me. And so I just started looking around, and the guys in the back of the plane tended to be either entrepreneurs or professionals, an awful lot of attorneys sitting back there. And I said, you know what? That's where I want to be. I want to be in the back of the plane. So that was my transition to thinking outside of aviation. Went to law school and business school first, just to get my grades up, and then law school. And it's been a ride ever since.
That's great. That's great. That's an interesting story. That's wonderful. So let's start talking about this communication issue that, you know, creates generations from generations. And the interesting thing here is when I was just in Nashville a few weeks ago, there's a family went to, it's the Belle Meade Estate, a plantation. And it's a family who in the 1800s, they created the, they were almost like the AMP and hardware store for everybody that's traveling through Nashville. In fact, they were such a significant family. They boarded horses, raised horses, bred horses. They actually had the first horse that won a race in England. And as such, they're actually in the 1860s charging $2,500 to stud this horse, which is a heck of a lot of money. They also entertained five presidents, the Vanderbilts, all that kind of stuff. But one of the big things is as they got closer to the 1900s, late 1890s, most of the people couldn't stop spending. And they even conversations with them, and they never really talked about money. And the reality is grandpa passed away. And back then, all the debt went to the next male heir, which was a two-year-old. So he had $90,000 of debt as a two-year-old. And they had to liquidate all the contents and all that kind of stuff. And basically, it became a national museum after that. But it was very, very interesting. And I thought to myself when we were been looking at you for a while, and I said, what if they had this conversation and people understood how to manage these things and they did it as a family? So everybody was on board and there wasn't this, you know, I don't care, I'm just going to spend. So that's what really brought me to your situation, because I see this time and time again, where you have a generation that builds this wealth and the next generation doesn't appreciate that wealth and kind of goes through it, or the generation after that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So a gentleman by the name of James E. Hughes Jr. wrote a book, I think 25 years ago now, called Family Wealth, Keeping It in the Family. And he wrote the book, part of the introduction or the first chapter tells a story of him being a fifth generation estate planning attorney. And he came in one day and his dad basically gave him an assignment to go see someone in China who wanted him to help him with a particular problem. And he says, what's the problem? He says, I don't know. Go see Mr. Lee and he'll tell you. So he hops on a plane and he goes and sees this gentleman and he says, so, sir, what can I do to help you? And he told the story of rags to riches to rags in three generations, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which is really what you're referring to. One generation creates the wealth, the next generation kind of rides it, and the, by the third generation, it's all gone. And this gentleman said to Mr. Hughes, to Attorney Hughes, I don't want that for my family. I want us to be able to perpetuate the wealth that we've created in our family. And so he took that assignment and it became his career. What the book that he wrote, Family Wealth, Keeping It in the Family, his findings were the families that were successful in keeping the wealth going focused on the family. And it was about what I refer to as the human utility of the wealth in the family. How does the money help people? How does it help them grow? How does it help them be happier? You have, as part of your goal for this podcast, that people have a healthier, happier relationship with money. That's actually one of the ways in which you perpetuate money in the family, is by being able then to focus on the people, that the people are the strength of the family's wealth. And then how does the money support the people to make the people stronger, better, more fulfilled, thriving? They then create their own wealth and perpetuate the wealth in the family.
Wow. I love that. So, Kevin, let's start talking about how somebody would go about creating that communication, creating that family legacy, and just kind of walk us through how that would work.
So, you know, I listened to quite a few of your podcasts, and appropriately, much of what you talk about is the accumulation phase. Many, many of the people that are listening today are still in the accumulation phase. They're still thinking about just how am I going to save enough for retirement? How am I going to get there? And that's absolutely an appropriate conversation. But as we move up Maslow's hierarchy, and we get to a place where we are financially secure, our consciousness begins to reach out and say, okay, what's next? Where are we going with our family's wealth next? So part of what I would ask people to just think about is, to what degree do you have an abundance? You know, traditional financial planning, do I have enough to retire? Am I taking care of my basic needs? Am I assuring that I'm not going to be a burden to my children? But then what? What is my purpose? What is the purpose of the wealth that I've accumulated? What can it do in the world? Perhaps it's helping to improve the lives of children today. I cannot tell you how many children or how many parents I sit with, and we'll talk about saving estate taxes at death. We'll talk about protecting inherited assets from claims of creditors and divorcing spouses and estate taxes for the kids. But then they'll say to me, but Kevin, I'm blessed. I know that I have more than I need now. My kids need money now. How can I help them? And that's where that communication thing is that we started to talk about. We don't know we're pretty poor as a society of talking intergenerationally about money. And so the first thing is to identify your purpose. What is it that I want my money to do? The next thing then is to engage your children in a conversation. Where are you in your life? What is going on with your life? What is the role of money in your life? They're probably in an accumulation phase or even just beginning the idea that they have to accumulate. And so it might be some basic financial planning with the kids, some basic understanding. Introduce them to the family's professionals. You know, we live in a do-it-yourself mentality today, and particularly the younger generation, millennials coming up. When they want something, they go on their cell phone and they look for it. Mm-hmm. They don't look and find who can tell me about this, who can teach me about this, who can help me about this. They go look for it from AI. They look at it from Google. So introduce your professionals to your children so that they have the ability to start understanding their finances themselves. The next one is to look for what I call underutilized wealth. Mm-hmm. Underutilized wealth is money that I don't have to have to be able to live the rest of my life comfortably, right? And if I can identify underutilized wealth, is there a better role for it in our family? A 529 for education, a savings account for down payment on houses. You've mentioned several times in the last couple of podcasts about how hard it is for kids to be able to save up a down payment for a house. It's really, really difficult out there. So should one of the things that our family do is set aside a pool of money that a young person can come to for a down payment on a house? Should that be something that we encourage? Should we have an educational fund that we encourage? And then can we use that learning to perpetuate the idea as a cultural piece of our family? And so it's at that conversation of pulling the kids in, getting their ideas, getting their understanding, introducing them to our professionals, so that they can begin to absorb the idea that they won't always be living paycheck to paycheck, right? And that the money that mom and dad leaves has a purpose in the world. If we can identify underutilized assets today, what's the best way to redeploy them? Paying off student loans, 529s or other educational accounts for grandchildren. Sending somebody, I've got a person right now, a person in our neighborhood, who has left her full-time job in her 40s to start a new career. She can only do it because her parents are able to help her out a little bit in her 40s to be able to go back to school in her 40s and learn a new profession and kind of re-jigger her or restart her life. So it's being willing to take the time to open the viewport a little bit, letting the kids understand that there might be some ways that the family can help. But then spending the time on what's important. What is it that we as a family stand for? What is it that we want our family's wealth to do? That way we can begin the conversation. If there's funds that we can redeploy, help others out. Now we are in a place where we're really in a participative process. And the rising generation is now participating in the family's wealth and using it in a beneficial, helpful way.
So first of all, I think that's a blessing for people to know that there's a fund to be able to go to college, to have the down payment. I think it's wonderful. And I think it's great when you talk about communications and almost, I want to say expectation, but it's one of those things where like when with our kids, they knew there was no other way, but they're going to college. and they did very, very well with it. And they have great careers. And it's one of those things that they're off the payroll and all that kind of stuff. And they're doing a lot better than many of their friends. And in fact, many of the other people that I know as friends or know, they're actually doing better than them because they worked hard to do that. So when somebody gets that first generation, hey, we've done it. We're making sure the next generation now. Help me understand the foundation for somebody who's coming to this saying, hey, how do I have this conversation with my family? What are the things that I say? How do I go about making, you know, that's the thing. How do I start that conversation? Because I think what you're talking about is wonderful and it should occur and it is a big blessing. But how do we start that conversation?
So I'm a big fan that whenever we update our estate plan, that we have a family meeting. We practically insist on it. We can't insist on it. We can't make our clients do it, but we practically insist with our clients that we have a family meeting and explain the estate plan. For those that are willing to do so, and we again encourage this, it includes a little balance sheet. This is what mom and dad have. This is how it's going to come to you. For some clients, it might be a trust that has transferred some assets that they don't own that are protecting from a nursing home spend down. We call it a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. We like to see all of the kids be co-trustees of that so that it creates a vehicle for the family now to sit down and talk about, now, we've set these funds aside for you. We've gotten past our five-year Medicaid rule. How are they going to be used? What's the best use of this? What do you kids think is the best use of this fund or this money? Even if we're not in a position where we've had money set aside, just to begin to have the conversation of, so you're going to inherit a few a few hundred thousand dollars. You're going to inherit $1 million. What's its role? What's it going to do for you? How are we going to take care of this in the family? Explain the trusts, explain the systems, explain whatever it is that they're receiving. I know you've spoken a lot about Roth IRAs. You know, why are we spending our tax money today so that you can Roth the IRA, so that you can inherit something that's not subject to income taxes, so that you can take that money and let it grow for 10 years tax-free, maybe doubling in value, and now you're going to have twice the inheritance without any income taxes on it. That's why I'm making this sacrifice today, you know, kids. That's something for you. Now, what are you going to do with it? How's it going to improve your lives? You know, they're going to say, well, mom and dad, you're not dead yet. You're good. That's fine. But incorporate it into your thought processes of what's the role of inherited money. You know, you're going to retire early. You're going to be able to put more away for tuition, knowing that you'll have something to fall back on, you know, here. And again, now turn it into an annual thing, that annually we sit down and look at where we are and where we're going and how's it working. Maybe there's been a bad downturn like the Great Recession, and maybe some of our plans are going to be impacted. Well, guess what? That's learning. Mm-hmm. That's learning, right?
And the reality is it's going to happen again.
That's right. It's going to happen again, and it'll happen again, and it'll happen again, and it'll pop back, and it'll happen again. And you know, they just don't teach financial literacy in schools. So it's an opportunity for some financial literacy. Dad, why in the world do you have, you know, $200,000 in bonds, for goodness sake? They do terrible. You know, my Google stock is going crazy. Why are, you know, talk about a balanced portfolio. Talk about, you know, risk.
Kevin, I'm sorry, we have to take a quick break, folks. We're going to be right back. This is wonderful. So stick with us. We're going to be right back before Kevin Quinn.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we're talking about the ins and outs of money. We're going to get right back into it with Kevin Quinn. Kevin, again, thanks for joining us today. Basically, we're talking about that communication process. The next step that I'd like to talk about is, you hear time and time again, especially with these real wealthy families where they've got a son or a daughter that has a substance abuse issue, spending issue, disabilities. You know what? When we're having that communication with the family, number one, how do we go about dealing with those special, I'm going to call them special need type people? And then what type of planning could be done to support them, help them without having them go through everything and become destitute?
Sure. Yeah, I'm a trust and estates guy. And so, I'm going to suggest to you that you talk to your estate planning attorney about different types of trust that you can use. So for a spendthrift, for someone who might be addicted to gambling, might be have other addictions that cause them not to be able to retain any assets. Having a trust with a trusted person in charge of it that perhaps says, you know what, we're only going to distribute 3% of what's in this trust every year. And that's essentially an annuity or an allowance or 4% or 5%. It doesn't matter what the percentage is. The idea is we say, if I just give this person $1 million, they're not going to be able to handle it. It's going to be gone and they're going to be destitute. If I say, here's $1 million, take $40,000 a year, that's $3,800 a month or $3,600 a month. Use that money to improve your life. Have a trustee sending that to their checking account. Give the trustee the authority then if they need to go to rehab, if they need to get some psychological help, if they need to get some medical help, that they can dig deeper into the pot for those limited purposes. So you have to really understand the individual and what their needs are, what they're capable of. I would always ask, however, that we include language in there that is hopeful. If the person is able to turn their life around, release the strings a little bit. If the person is able to do so, become a co-trustee with the professional or have direct visibility with the professional so they know what's going on. I've been in this situation a number of times, and I often find that the beneficiary who is suffering is thankful for the advice, thankful for the protections, and particularly if they're brought into the picture and shown what's in the trust, how it's working, how it's producing for them, that, you know, we're only distributing 3% so that you get 2 or 3% of growth every year. That way your money is keeping up with inflation and we can give you a raise next year. So that's one thing for a person perhaps with some spending issues or an inability to understand money or an inability to keep money.
So Kevin, I just want to share this. One of the things you said is to bring them into the fold and have them understand what is going on. I've had conversations with families who've done things like that, but they haven't shared anything. They just got something. And I found that those kids seem pretty resentful, but the ones who understand what's going on, knowing that they're getting a certain thing that is going to increase with inflation, it's a far different outlook. And I love the fact that you said hopeful, criteria. So if things get better, you can get more. If you do this, you can get more, and so on and so forth. Obviously, there's language in there. If they take a step back, then it takes a step back. Is that correct?
That's right. And, you know, nobody, I don't know a single human person that wants to be controlled.
No.
Right? But yeah. I know I have my weaknesses. I know I have my things that I'm not good at. I'm fortunate enough to be able to hire people that do things that I'm not good at. Mm-hmm. But maybe for the inheritor, it's hiring that trustee to help them manage the money, make sure it lasts for them, provides for them. And by bringing them in, teaching them about the money, teaching about how it grows, teaching about what it can produce, it gives them the confidence then to know they've got something, they're okay. And then learn more. And as they, again, maybe they're able to get some counseling, maybe they're able to get some therapy, then perhaps we can allow them to receive more or do more with the funds. They may not need it then once they get their life squared away. They may not even need to have that allowance money anymore. Then it's just beneficial.
That's great. So let's talk about, in all families, you know, whether it's mine, it could be yours, you know what, you have misunderstandings, okay? And, or you're dealing with kids who think they should get more than somebody else because they've done something for somebody else. And there's a communication issue that deals with that. And this is a few things, and I'd love you to comment on this because many of our viewers and listeners are saying, hey, how do I deal with this? I've got somebody who thinks because they've been helping out mom and dad or somebody else that they're entitled to more. And I have a feeling it's a communication issue, but what would be the best way to handle something like that?
So if you wouldn't mind, three quick things. The first is to circle back. What we didn't talk about was the supplemental needs trust, and we could do a whole session on supplemental needs trust. But for those persons receiving Social Security benefits and are limited to the $2,000, et cetera, there's a supplemental needs trust that is designed to meet U.S. government Social Security requirements, where a parent or other could put in money to the trust, and it supplements what the government does not able to do. So that's just one for those that are perhaps suffering from severe mental illness, physical incapacity, and are completely dependent on the government funds. Going back to your question, though, one of the things that I ask families all the time, and unfortunately, they often fail to do it until it's too late, is if I do have the son or the daughter that is providing disproportionate care, that is providing disproportionate help and support for an elder, pay them now. Almost insist on it. Because their siblings don't have an idea, they don't have a clue of the degree of their sacrifice unless they're actually participating. If we pay them, then they are recognized, their sacrifice is recognized, and they don't feel an entitlement to a larger portion of the estate when mom and dad die. The conflict comes when mom dies, and I say, but I gave up 5 years of my life to look after mom. You were down in Florida sitting on the beach with a martini. I was taking every single hour of the day that I could, and I was looking after mom. I was taking care of her house. I was taking care of her laundry. I was taking care of all of her personal needs. I was doing her shopping. Why, I should get something more from the estate. Well, that's not what the estate planning documents say. What the estate planning documents say is you each get half, and then you end up with controversy, right? And so if part of, so the first thing is have the conversation. If a child is offering that care, mom and dad kind of have a duty to say, listen, the estate plan is equal. That's the way we want to keep it. Can we pay you now? Can we recognize your service? Can you recognize your help by paying you now? Or if we are going to do something disproportionate in the estate planning documents, let all the siblings know now, speak up now. Because if after death, we can't go to mom and dad and say, why did you give Johnny 60% and I got 40%? Right? That hurt lasts the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's nothing I can do about it. I can't talk to my mom and dad from the grave, and it just sticks with me. So if you're in a situation where your children are going to be providing disproportionate care between them, documented in some way. Make sure the family knows what your expectations are. And if your expectations are, if my son wants to come and help and take care of the house, that's on him. I can afford to hire a handyman. Then I need to have that conversation with my son, that he not feel entitled because he's coming every weekend and giving from his life to help me. That's the key, is to be able to have the conversation. And you're right. The linchpin is you don't want controversy. I've never met the parent that wants their children to be fighting and destroying relationships after their death.
Yeah, and it's too bad. All too often sometimes that happens. But I think it's wonderful because I've never heard somebody say, you know what, I want to pay you now. Or even say, hey, look, everybody, Jenny's doing this, this, and this, and this for us. So therefore, she's given up this many years of her life, and we're going to be doing this as part of the trust, as part of the estate, so she can have that for her service to us. Sure. And I, you know what? If people knew that, I think it'd be a big, big, big difference. Also, might mean other people would step up too. Who knows?
We even do this with guardians. In the trust that we design, we'll often have minor children with a guardian and recognize that that guardian might have taken years of their lives. They might have not taken a promotion because they had to be able to be there to look after your kids because you're gone. So maybe there needs to be a stipend for the guardian. Maybe there needs to be a cash payment to the guardian when the kids leave the house. Just think about what it is the people are helping you with, the import of what they're doing, and recognize that that value so that that person doesn't feel entitled. For the young person who feels an inappropriate entitlement, not because of a situation we just did, but just because they feel entitled, those are much, much harder conversations. That's about parenting, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where then, once again, I'm going to suggest to avoid hurt that there be some blunt conversations. There's a great book called Fierce Conversations. There's another one called Crucial Conversations that will help you think through how it is that I have a difficult conversation with someone who needs to re-examine what they're doing and help them come to their own conclusions about where they're going in their lives. It's important because, again, you know, if we're going to be promoting happier, healthier relationships with wealth or with money, if I have an entitlement mentality, I am never going to be happy.
That's so true.
And there's no amount of money that will make me happy.
That is so true.
So what is the purpose of our money? How can it help people? How can it increase well-being? These are conversations that are really hard to have when we're in the accumulation phase.
Oh, yeah.
But as soon as we start to get some sense that there's light at the end of that tunnel, that we will be financially independent, the ask is to begin to think about what the role of family's wealth is. What is it that my abundance can do for people? And to what degree will money help improve lives?
That's wonderful. We're here talking to Kevin Quinn, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about estate planning. And I want to just leave this segment to Kevin to, you know, just share things that people should be knowing about. What would be important that everybody, you think everybody should be knowing about if they're looking at the estate planning process?
So the very first thing to ask people to do, in the midst of all of the noise in our political situation, our divide as a country, it's just noise. There's just a whirlwind of noise. Sit down with your significant other if you have one, or just for yourself. Take a walk in the woods, take a trip to the beach, and just think about where you are in your life and what your money is doing for your family. If you're a young parent, you know what it is. You're keeping the mortgage paid, you're keeping food on the table, you're keeping insurance so that we have health care. But if your family has left the home, if you are an empty nester and you're looking at adult children and perhaps grandchildren, and particularly if you can identify some abundance. So maybe the first thing to do is sit with your financial planner and understand whether or not you have any abundance. Then what can that abundance do? What should it do in our lives? For the older generation, it enriches our lives to know that our 30 and 40 years of work are going to do important things for our family, even beyond the grave. That the wealth that we have accumulated, that we sweat for, that we've risked for, that we've sacrificed for, is going to have meaning in the family. Then for the rising generation, when we share this information, when we increase family communication about wealth, when we think about the values that we place around wealth, what degree do we share those values as a family? We begin an education process. We begin breaking down those barriers to communication. And we allow families to talk about wealth in the family in very beneficial ways. Then when we do inherit, it's more meaningful, it's more impactful. If I'm fortunate enough to have money that I can give away while I'm alive, now what's the best purpose? What's the best use? Is it removing debt? Is it helping with housing? Is it education? Is it startup of a business? What's the best use of the money in the family? For those who might have an interest in it, we have on our Legacy Counselors website a whole page dedicated to this. It is the My Family, My Wealth section of our website. There's a little paper that you can get about ways in which you can redeploy underutilized wealth in your family. So that's one of the ways that we can help the community, is by offering to explore how your wealth might help increase the well-being and flourishing in your family. It's all about the people of the family and bringing the money to the highest utility and supporting the people in the family. That's really the key things that I think I would want to say to people, is take the time, think about your wealth, think about your abundance, think about what the role of money is in your life. If you inherited, you know, $5,000, but that was the $5,000 that got you a down payment on your first house, think about how important that was, right? Mm-hmm. Then use those stories, use those things to start the conversation in the family. If there's a caution, the caution is to avoid telling people. None of us wants to be controlled, and none of us want to be talked to. Parents kind of tend to be talking to their kids.
All our parents are smiling right now. Yep.
And even when they're adults, sometimes we continue to talk to them and not talk with them. Invite them into the conversation. Ask about their interests. Ask about what it is that they want to accomplish in their lives. Ask about how money might do that. For those that truly have a great abundance, maybe you can invite them into your philanthropy. Maybe you can invite them to spend time with you at the food bank. Maybe you can spend time with them on how it is that we give money away. Yeah. It doesn't have to be just within the family bounds. The other things to make sure you talk about is, who is our family? In today's world, there are a lot of committed relationships that are not tied with a legal document. So is the committed relationship a part of our family? Is my in-law, my son's girlfriend, who's been living with him for 15 years and gave him two children, part of our family? How do we define our family? How do we define the degree to which we have abundance? And then how do we share that in meaningful, impactful ways in our family? And then can we look outside of our family and see if there's ways that we can, with enjoyment, with fulfillment, with grace, give back to others?
That was very well said, Kevin. Now, if somebody were to say, hey, we want to seek out Kevin and his firm, Legacy Counselors, how do they go about doing that?
LegacyCounselors.com. It's kind of spelled a strange way. It's L-E-G-A-C-Y. But Counselors is CounselorsCom. So two L's, ORS.com. And if you go particularly to the My Family, My Wealth page, you'll see how it is that we offer this service to the community. Many of our clients gravitate towards this process in the estate planning process, so we incorporate it in our estate planning. We have long-term relationships with our clients, and over the years, we're just able to continue to talk about this and talk about this and talk about this. These are not things that happen overnight. These conversations in the family are not one-offs. They're conversations mm-hmm. that you have again and again and again, building a culture of sharing these concepts about family wealth.
I think that's a great point. It doesn't happen overnight, and it's a long term. I know of three people who've had family communication since their kids were young, and it took them a while for the kids to get to a point where they understand the finance, but they didn't understand what things meant until they had kids and got married, and now these conversations that they have are far more robust, and the kids are far more prepared when they have these conversations, just like the family meeting that you talked about, and it is once a year, and they're really grateful for it because they have a better understanding of what's going on financially than most of their friends, and they're more grateful for that. They're grateful for the fact that they don't have the issues that the other families have, or the disillusionment and so on, even when mom and dad are still around with that stuff. So what you're saying is just outstanding. It can create a much better, more robust, harmonious family relationship. And I think that's wonderful.
Great. Thank you.
Kevin, I want to thank you for being here today. This has been outstanding. And you know what? We'll love to have you back sometime, maybe have a more targeted subject. Again, thanks you for being here with us today, folks. Thank you again, Kevin Quinn, for being with us today. Go check a look at Legacy Counselors. Again, counselors is spelled counsellors.com. And with that, thanks again, Kevin.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Folks, stick with us. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything that's on relates to you having a happier, happier relationship with money. Folks, all the replayers are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empower you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. You can also follow us on Facebook at the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page. Check out the Insiders Club, the whole shot. And you know what? We're back. Let's talk about geopolitical risk. They are taking front and center stage, as we all know, by the events in the Middle East with Iran, Israel. We are seeing stocks drop, gold and oil rally. The U.S. dollar initially dropped and is barely rallying. The last one actually, the last one here is quite interesting. The U.S. dollar. For decades, the U.S. dollar has been considered a safe haven asset, which capitalists flock to in times of global turmoil. During 9/11, it jumped 2% when Russia invaded Ukraine. It jumped in similar amounts. The dollar is not doing that this time. This is a major tell from the financial system. We are in a new currency regime. One thing that will be defined by the U.S. dollar weakness, even in times of geopolitical stress. What will also be interesting going forward is to look at bond yields to see how much of the move is an anticipation of inflation and how much is a flight to safe haven. The nature of these events is clearly something that could fuel stagflation. Folks, now is the time to make intelligent decisions to clear a path to continued growth through safety. You have a choice to whether or not you want to continue to participate in this economic roller coaster. This uncertainty, volatility will continue to dominate the landscape for the foreseeable future. There's never been a better time to do what we're doing, and we're halfway through the year. It's halftime. When you go to sports, what do teams go at halftime? If they're not doing well, it's not going on the right path. They make simple, small, intelligent adjustments to secure the win. We're halfway through the year, folks. This is the time to make simple, small, intelligent adjustments to secure your financial well-being, especially with all this uncertainty and volatility. I mean, it's almost like a whiplash economy. So, folks, I want to thank you all for joining us today on Saving with Steve. I hope you have a wonderful week. Look forward to speaking with you next time right here on Saving with Steve.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.